Oh, you want me to tell?
Yeah, I was asking at this time when you're exploring both avenues, what you thought of pursuing if you were going to go into teaching.
I was going to, I decided I should try for history because it was easy, or I mean it was possible to get a degree in history and education by going to night school, and it was relatively impossible to get a degree in home ec at night school because any course that required a lot of laboratory, it seemed like was difficult and not impossible. They just didn't have laboratory courses at night then. I'm not saying they don't now, but at that time, I didn't know of any. They didn't have them down here at State College.
So you were actually going to go after a teaching credential then?
Yes, and teach history if things didn't get better at Lockheed. I never gave up.
But your preference was to stay at Lockheed and move into more professional classifications.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, then, so you were going to school at night and working as this technical writer bee. At what point did your work change?
Well, we put out some special manuals at one time, and so then instead of being in the regular building where most of these writers were, there were a few of us went to a, as a matter of fact, went back to the old hangar where I'd worked, 309. See, the Model 89 was no longer in there now. It had been gone. The Navy had taken it or whatever they'd done with it. And they were making some special modified P2s. So anyway, they sent this one fella, and I think, let's see, and we had got a man that came in from, he had bumped in, and he was a tech writer, being famous as I was. And we had gone over there to put out a special little manual on this book. Well, there were a lot of new engineers upstairs, and there were things that they like to know. See, this was all mock-up. They were changing so much of this stuff. And then there were some illustrators over there, and of course, most of them I knew. I think I got acquainted with one or two new ones. You know, no matter wherever you changed, you always met one or two new people. But some of them were the same ones that had been doing illustrations for me at the other building. And I went upstairs, I remember, but we had to work very closely with those engineers up there to find out, because we were supposed to have that book out, I think, 30 days before the ship was delivered, and yet there were things we didn't know about. Oh, I tell you, the way they expect all these things to be out when, particularly, now, that's all right on a production model, but this wasn't a production model, and actually, I don't think the government should expect it, but they always like to have those books out 30 days ahead of time so they can get all their paperwork ready so when the ship flies. So anyway, we'd have to go up there to ask them what was going to be this and what was going to be that. And they found out that I had a lot of information on the ship before it was modified. So the first thing I knew, sometimes they were coming down to ask me questions. Now, I don't mean that they were asking me any highly technical questions. All they wanted was the kind of thing, it was information that I knew where it was on parts and what had been that later served me in good stead because then I came back for a while and then I went over again, and this time I worked with another man and there was another woman over there, and we were working on yet another. They were modifying one of these P2s. They called it the Admiral's Barge, and I'm sure it's no longer classified, but it was then. It was supposed to be used for high Navy brass, and some of the apartments in it were pretty nice. Then they also did what they called a ski job. They modified one of them to go up, to be way up in Alaska, as far up as, and of course this had ski runners on it and all. Then they had one. What in the world did they call that? Anyway, it was modified to carry a lot of classified material. I don't know if I should tell yet what it was supposed to do. We knew, but of course, you see, we were we weren't supposed to talk with anybody about it. And all the time I worked there, I never told people any details of my job, because that was supposed to be, well, you weren't supposed to do that. And anyway, I found that it wasn't really very interesting to most people.
But you were essentially doing the same sort of work.
Yes. Yes, it was the same, only this was a little more difficult because it wasn't a production model. You weren't working from, you were working from mock-up prints, and sometimes you'd get it written and then they'd discover that didn't work and it would be changed. And so working from mock-up prints wasn't quite the same. But anyway, I was still a technical writer bee, but I began to agitate to get made an A because it looked to me like I knew as much about this as that man over there. As a matter of fact, see, he had come from commercial. Now, he was that's all right. He had worked on the commercial, but there were a lot of things about the military he didn't know. But, of course, at that time, there was still a lot of that about women. And I remember when I asked to be, to get that classification, that, that must have been just after that, later, when I had a different supervisor. I can remember the supervisor telling me there weren't going to be any women analysts. By then, they had changed the classification. We were doing the same work, getting the same pay, but we were no longer called technical writers. We were called, of all things, they called that a catalog. They later took that out of it, but we were called analysts, catalog analysts and catalog technicians. And the analysts got quite a bit more pay, I think, go up to 25 cents or more an hour. And it struck me that I was doing as good or better than some of those men, and I thought I ought to have that classification and be paid that. Well, what I didn't know when I had worked over there the first time was that a couple of those engineers upstairs that I was talking to, I didn't know it at the time, but they were very active in the union. As a matter of fact, I guess one was a president and one was a, what in the world was he? Well, he may just have been a union steward, but he was an active union steward. He was in. Well, I didn't know it at the time. I just gave them information, asked them for information. So about the summer of, let's see, that must have been about the summer of 50, I wanted to be made an, I wanted to be made an analyst, but this, there were two or three men there that were determined I wasn't going to get that classification. And there was a little difficulty, and I went to the union. Now, I didn't put in a grievance. I didn't have to put in a grievance. But I talked with, anyway, I remember they're asking our union steward what about it, and he said, well, he would enforce the union contract. So that kind of, but anyway, when, see, I guess I talked to the president of our union, and then I began to realize that those two fellows that I had worked with up there, of course, they always heard about all everything. I'll say one thing for our union. They always, they did not encourage you to file a grievance. If you thought something ought to be done, talk with them, and they would talk to them, and that is what happened. But I guess because I had known and worked with those two, they told the union that, told the union president that if I filed a grievance, that I would have a very good chance of winning, because I guess they said they'd go to bat for me. So I got my classification.
Now, so instead of going from technical writer B, while you were still technical writer B, the classifications changed, was that?
Yeah, and I was a technician then for a while.
I see.
And, but I wanted to be an analyst.
Yeah. So, which would have been the equivalent to the classifications not changed of going from B to A.
Yeah. I wanted to be an analyst because I figured that I was doing the same work as many of those men, and I knew the specs, and so I finally got the classification. But it wasn't easy, and I did have to go to the union about it, but I didn't have to file a grievance.
What was the attitude of the supervisor who had told you that women were not going to be made animals once you actually got the promotion?
Well, I don't know if I should tell you, but he kind of gave me a rough time. Then a little later, now this was in 52, he decided, let's see, there was, of course, there was always a change in personnel. And anyway, there was one of those books, an Air Force book that was behind. And see, I hadn't worked on Air Force yet. I had only worked on Navy.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, on commercial a little bit, too, but I hadn't worked on Air Force. Well, he sent me back. The reason I say back is because I was sitting up in the front. I went back to work on an Air Force book, he told me. And there were a couple of men then. Now, these were new hires. They hadn't been in there very long. They were going to help me. Well, all went well for a long time, and then finally, a young man that had worked there a few years before and had quit and came back, he was put there. Well, of course, he didn't like the idea that I was checking his work. See, he was kind of, he, you know, didn't want a woman to check his work. Looking over his work, oh, we always had a difficulty with attaching parts. So many of the people couldn't find the parts attached. And here he had picked up some parts that didn't even touch these items. So I just very calmly, without realizing how it would affect him, told him that, showed him on the print, here were the attaching parts, and that that he had made a mistake there. I tried to be very careful because those men, I couldn't tell them their mistakes the way a man could have told them. So, but he gave me an argument, and I showed him on the print, and he said, Harry, that was that supervisor that said there wouldn't be any woman analyst, said, Harry said once, when it came to attaching parts, just take some of those nuts and bolts off the bill of material and put them down there. And I said, oh, I'm sure Harry didn't say that. Well, he vowed he did. And he was going up to Harry. Well, we got into, that caused a little bit of a furor because it put Harry in a spot. But I told Harry if I was going to be responsible for that book, this kid, I call him, because by then I was older and he was quite, I said, he's going to have to do it right. Well, instead of admitting that he had told this kid that, and I found out later he really had, I believe the kid, we had to have a meeting and they had a big lecture about attaching parts and connecting parts. And I told him, well, call them what you will. They've got to touch the part. You're not going to have something that attaches something else and call it attaching to them. So then... not long after that, I've forgotten what else happened. Something happened. Anyway, I decided that as long as Sam Harry was supervisor, he was going to give me a bad time. Now, I knew our department manager very well, and there was this other group that was under him, and I knew that supervisor. I didn't say, but that supervisor was such a kind of a rough and ready guy that a lot of the girls didn't like to work for him. And I didn't realize when I went down, I thought I was angry. I decided that, anyway, I didn't realize that I had been so busy that our department manager was away on business, and the section supervisor, who was over my supervisor, was sitting in for him. Also, I didn't know that not long before that, some girls had been down there complaining about this other supervisor, the rough and ready one that did another kind of work, but still worked the print. So I went down there and I told Reg, who was a real nice guy, that that expression wasn't it at that time, but I told him that there was just no point in my trying to get along with Harry, that we just couldn't get along, and I wanted to transfer into this other group. Well, I didn't get the transfer, but Harry let up on me. He didn't give me a bad time after that, because by then he realized that if he... kept on the way he was, that I wasn't going to take it anymore. But What I didn't know until later was that this other supervisor was so gratified that one woman would ask to be transferred into his department that later on, for years, as long as he was there, once in a while when I needed help, he came to my help, really gave me good help after that.
In what ways, Brita?
Oh, once in a while, later on, I had what we call the little books, and sometimes I didn't want to ask this Harry anything, and if I didn't want to ask him, I'd go because this Johnny Law that was that I had asked to go work for, believe me, he knew. He was the he was the technical expert around there, and so if I ever needed some good information, I could go to him.
So it was a matter of, I mean, once you came to a kind of truce almost with Harry, but not letting him know at any point that there was something you didn't know and going to somebody else.
Yes, yes. Well, you know, later on, they used to urge people to ask questions, but that was one thing. And, of course, maybe it was good for me because instead of asking him a question every time I should have, I learned to dig out the information from other places. So then later, when I was on salary, I could tell the people that that were under me where to get this mm-hmm. information, and it also gave me some good mm-hmm. contacts. So I guess because a few years later, we got another supervisor and another section supervisor, and that little section supervisor, I had worked with him years before, but he was just as chauvinistic too, you know, didn't want women to have that kind of a job. This Harry was in charge of we called it tab. It was, they were really starting into computer work, and he had a lot of that. And I remember I had to go ask him something, and I was asking him, and he said, well, now, tell me, Frieda, what model are you talking about? And I said, why, Harry, the T-33, don't you remember when you put me back on the T-33? I said, that's the nicest thing you ever did for me. He said, well, I'm glad you think I did one nice thing for you. So it wasn't always easy, but I tried to not be obnoxious, but I thought I should have whatever was coming to me, and generally most of the men agreed with me, because particularly the men I had worked with. Mm-hmm.
Now, were you the only woman in that kind of classification?
For a long time mm-hmm. I was, but I've forgotten how many years, because by then this Flora was no longer doing it. She had been promoted to a contract administrator, and for quite a few, let's see, from about 49 to, quite a while, I was the only woman doing that kind of work. Now, I don't mean that there were women engineers at Lockheed, mm-hmm. and I don't mean that I was the only woman at Lockheed doing any kind of technical work, but I was the only one that was working on those IPBs. Mm-hmm. We call them illustrated parts breakdowns now. We no longer call them catalogs.
Well, Frieda, during that stretch, when you were the only woman, and then even when some other women came in, who would be your companions at work?
Well, I got along with all the other women, and I got to know some of them. But actually, in a way, I didn't make as many close friends. I got along with the. I always liked the. We had some stenographers in the group, and but I didn't. There wasn't. Well, I usually ate lunch with them. Oh, and I ate lunch with a bunch of girls downstairs that I had worked with before I came up. I used to go down and eat lunch with them. So, but I didn't. And sometimes we went to things after work mm-hmm. like that. But during working, the actual working time. Except that I saw the women in the restroom. Now, I'll say this, though. At that time, until the Korean War, we did not get many new hires. So everybody in the building got to know they knew each other quite well.
So you were more likely, though, say, to have lunch with women from other departments than with the men in your department?
Yeah, well, they were, no, it was all one big department, but other little groups
that
worked downstairs. Yeah, mm-hmm. Subsection. Yes, I ate lunch with several of let's see, oh, one was the secretary to, I guess we were a division by then. Anyway, well, maybe not. I don't remember when we quit being a department and became a division. But the secretary to the biggest boss downstairs, and then there was a girl that did the comptometer work for the, there were a couple of them, and then Miss Flora, that was she was a contract administrator, but she often ate mm-hmm. lunch with us. There were those of us that had sort of worked together for a long time before we had been downstairs together, before the IPB section, well, part of this IPB section had been downstairs for a while. And then in a reorganization, it all got put upstairs, and they made a section supervisor mm-hmm. and all that. So anyway, so I usually went down and ate lunch mm-hmm. with them.
And how about, you say that you did not make close friends, though, with...
Well, I did a few, but see, I was going to night school. And yes, there was a woman lived here in come to think of it now, there was Peggy. She lived here in Glendale. We were quite friendly.
And she was in that same department with you?
She was in the same mm-hmm. department. She was, there again, she was a clerk for one of the supervisors. They called them department mm-hmm. clerks. And then I guess they could finally call them department clerks generals. She was good. She could take shorthand. And she lived in Glendale. One reason I didn't make more friends with them, almost because they all lived way out in the valley.
Mm-hmm.
I usually made friends with the ones that lived in Eagle Rock, mm-hmm. Pasadena, or Glendale, because, you know, it was just easier.
Now, when you were having these problems about the fight over classification, would you discuss this at all with these friends that you had lunch with?
Not too much. I had learned by then, they knew what was going on, but I was careful what I said, because, you know, whatever you say in a big organization can come back to you, come back to haunt you, even though the person doesn't mean to say it. I don't say, a lot of this gossip is not malicious. It's just, you know, you hear it, and then you draw your own conclusion, and the first thing you know, you don't get to tell the whole story because this one runs off, and the first thing you know, the wrong things can come out. So I don't say that they didn't know it, but I was careful mm-hmm. not to. The one I guess I did confide in most was this one illustrator over there, this woman that had been my illustrator when I was over at this other building mm-hmm. at the time, because she knew about it and said that if I needed anybody to, she said if they want anybody, she said, I'll tell them that you furnished me a data sheet always for my illustrations and that I could always give her an answer if she asked and all that, but they didn't ask her. But anyway.
So it sounds like you got support from women in positions like that.
Well, yes. Oh, although she was an illustrator. Now, that paid more. That was an hourly classification. It still is, but it was a higher paid one. And yeah, as a matter of fact, I got some support sometimes that I didn't know till afterward. But anyway, I got my classification, and I tried not to hold any animosity because, but I was on my guard.
Were there stories about other women having these kinds of problems during this period, say before the Korea buildup and before the new
Hollywood? Well, now some of this, oh boy, there's a squirrel out there on the line. He's going to go down to my avocado tree. Well, I'll let him. I'm going to set a trap for him yet. Well, yes, you'd hear of them once in a while, mostly the women were in the classifications that they thought women ought to be in. And so, you know, they were clerks and part sales order clerks, which was really a secretary, only they didn't call him a secretary. And so those women were all happy with their classifications. We did have one woman come there. She got to be a union chairman. She'd come from the studio. She was there during the strike in 52. And she got to be a union chairman. First thing you know, she got good classification. But I got in on the details of that. But I guess sometimes they said they'd give the union chairman a good classification to shut him up. I don't know.
Well, how about this friend who was an illustrator? Did she feel that she had been passed over?
Oh, no. She was content because, see, the illustrators made, they made pretty good money. They made more than the analysts. And later on, she quit, and she and her husband moved up to Oregon. So she didn't intend to work there all the rest of her life. No, but she thought I ought to have that classification because she was right there. See, we were in the same room, and she said, well, of course you're doing the same work they are. And I tell you that because, Lockheed's real proud now to put in their star all the things that these women are doing. But I can remember, we put our names on certain things that went out once or twice. I remember I got a call once. Somebody wanted to talk to Mr. Campbell.